Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland is forming a new unit to address the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people. It's an issue that continues to get a brighter spotlight thanks to the efforts of survivors, family members, and advocates. Statistics consistently show Native people are disproportionately represented among those missing and murdered. Today, we'll look at the ways the government has been effective in addressing the issue. We go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The United Nation in Wisconsin is offering services for casino employees who may need to speak with a counselor as the tribe and surrounding community recovers from a deadly shooting. On Saturday night, shots were fired at a restaurant at the Oneida Casino's Hotel and Conference Center in Green Bay. Two people were killed, one injured, and the suspect was shot by police, according to the Brown County Sheriff's Office. Oneida Nation officials in a press conference Sunday expressed their sadness to the victims' families and are offering support to casino employees as a multi-jurisdictional investigation takes place. Chairman Tahasi Hill.
We've done our best to pull together as the Oneida Business Committee and our senior management to make sure that we're providing our employees the best response we can at this time. And so again, we're just trying to make sure we have a balanced approach to recovery from the situation, making sure we're taking care of the physical health and safety, making sure mental health is being taken care of, and also spiritual health. So we want to make sure we continue to move forward with a balanced approach to recovery from this terrible situation.
Vice Chairman Brandon Stevens says the tribe has received offers of support from federal leaders and the White House. As of Sunday, the tribe was still getting information about the shooting and coordinating efforts with employees. Stevens says the tribe will be evaluating its emergency response as previous active shooter training drills helped play a role in the incident. He says safety is of top concern.
We wanted to make sure that our community, as well as the broader community, understand how Oneida Nation handles the situation as a family, as a nation. And we want a broader community to understand that we will continue to do our best. Our most possible resources will be dedicated to the recovery and long-term impacts, not only to the families, but to the broader community as well. And we want to make sure that Northeast Wisconsin is safe, that we're working continually with the local agencies and municipalities, that they understand that we need to work and continue to work together on incidents and to prevent incidents like this from happening.
Investigators believe the shooting was targeted and not random. The sheriff's office is expected to provide updates Monday. The casino is closed as the investigation continues. Counseling services are being offered on-site with no appointment needed or telephone resources for anyone wanting to call from home. The Menominee Indian Tribe has scored another legal victory in its fight against Canadian firm Aquila Resources and the company's plan to build the Back 40 mine on the Michigan-Wisconsin border. As Danielle Kading reports, a Michigan judge has sent the company's mining permit back for further review of the project's potential impacts on groundwater.
Aquila wants to mine primarily gold and zinc from an open pit near the Menominee River. The permit is one of several needed for the project. The recent ruling is linked to a January decision by a Michigan administrative law judge who revoked a wetlands permit for the project. The judge found Aquila's groundwater model is not reliable enough to identify the mine's impacts on wetlands. Earth Justice attorney Gussie Lord, who represents the tribe, says experts for the tribe and state found Aquila underestimated the mine's impacts to groundwater.
The projections, for example, for groundwater levels were off by as much as 10 feet, which is, makes a big difference for wetlands impacts, surface stream impacts.
The recent ruling means an administrative law judge will reconsider testimony and evidence to determine whether the mining permit should be upheld or denied. Both Michigan environmental regulators and Aquila Resources declined to comment on the ruling. Menominee Tribal Chairman Gunnar Peters said in a statement that the tribe will not stop fighting until the water and sacred sites are protected for good. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homeland, Sherwood-Dui. All of our shows this week are dedicated to exploring the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people. Experts call the disproportionate number of missing and murdered Native women and girls an epidemic. We'll hear from family members who are left struggling for answers. We'll also touch on the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous men. And we'll also get a picture of the similarities and differences in how the issue affects Canada and Mexico. That's all this week. Wednesday is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Native Women and Girls, but today we are going to look at how federal and state and tribal governments are working to address the problem. What works, what doesn't. Legislation like Violence Against Women Act, Savannah's Act, and the Not Invisible Act all have provisions that are aimed at addressing the greater issue. If you have something you'd like to share, give us a call. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Carrie Colfer. She is a Senior Native Affairs Advisor for the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center, and Carrie is Tlingit. Carrie, thank you for being with us. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you for having me.
And so, Carrie, we'd like to start off having you give us a broad view of the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people in the United States, knowing that getting accurate numbers is sometimes challenging.
Sure. Well, we know that Native people go missing or are murdered at disproportionate rates, with murder rates of Native women on some reservations reaching 10 times the national average. And we know that American Indian and Alaska Native women are 2.5 times more likely to experience violent crimes, 2 times more likely to experience rape than other groups. But getting accurate data has proven extremely difficult, so we really don't know how many missing people are out there. We know that there are about 1,500 American Indian and Alaska Native missing persons that have been entered into the National Crime Information Center, but in reality, those numbers are likely far higher due to underreporting and inaccurate data collection.
And so what needs to happen to really turn things around? What do you think?
Well, as far as in terms of the data collection aspect, I mean, I think tribes need access to federal databases. We need to work on how tribal enrollment options are put into those reportings and work on as well as protocols for responding to cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women for law enforcement, and then coordination among law enforcement and among federal agencies on these issues.
And so when we think about all this, do you consider it a crisis or an epidemic?
I hear both words used. I usually say crisis. I guess to me, epidemic sometimes seems more related to diseases, where I think a crisis seems to mark a point in time where action has to be taken, and I think we've been at that point for a very long time.
And so the Biden administration is just getting started, but can you speak to some of the efforts that have already been made to address this issue?
Well, the Biden administration has been very vocal about the president's support for the Violence Against Women Act reauthorization. VAWA is a bill that he first championed when it passed in 1994. The current reauthorization bill is especially important for addressing violence against Native women, so I hope to see continued support from the administration on these issues. And then we also had the new Missing and Murdered Unit introduced by Secretary Holland in the Department of the Interior, which will work on both unsolved and active cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people. Because it's so new, we don't much more about it than that at the moment, but I'm hopeful that it will, you know, address this issue.
Can you expand on exactly what that is and what, you know, what we can see from it?
Well, that's, we don't exactly know. It's supposed to build on the Operation Lady Justice Task Force, which was created in the last administration. And it will hopefully encourage cross-departmental as well as interagency work involved in cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women. And so, you know, we're hoping to see that this actually allows for coordination among federal agencies and puts the full weight of the federal government into investigating these cases.
Carrie, can you explain a little bit more about how the system works? Because somebody maybe who is new to our Native circles and is wondering, why would they put this kind of unit in something of the department as opposed to Department of Justice? Talk to us a little bit about that, of why it actually does need to be in this department.
Well, the Native people are the only people governed under the Department of Interior, so I think that's really significant. But I do think it needs to be under all federal agencies. I think it's important that all federal agencies are putting their resources towards, you know, in what way they can, towards dealing with the crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous women. So I do think it needs to be all departments, but we know that Secretary Holland has made this a priority, you know, in her time in Congress and promised that it would be a priority as Secretary of the Interior, and we see her really quickly fulfilling that promise.
And more specifically, law enforcement falls under this agency. Talk to us a little bit about that, of why it does need to really be looked into in this agency. Basically, explaining for people who don't know, tribal police are under this agency. Go ahead, Carrie.
Right, yeah. So tribal police are under this agency, and one really, you know, one of the barriers that tribes experience in data collection and dealing with cases of missing and murdered Indigenous people is that a lot of these different law enforcement agencies don't talk, they don't coordinate, they don't have established protocols, or they don't have the same protocols, I guess, for addressing these cases. And so jurisdiction can be confusing, and, you know, one law enforcement agency may have a different way of responding to cases of missing Native persons than another. And so it's really important that these agencies have some established protocols for these cases, and that they're also coordinating with each other and sharing information. And so, you know, doing this work under the Department of Interior will help to aid in that.
Thanks for that. And if you'd like to join us when we think about legislation that has helped the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people, has there been any that has really been successful that has helped you, your community, your family? You can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And tribal leaders, if you are out there, we also would like to hear your thoughts. Maybe you've done work to push forward some of the things that are helping. You can always reach us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And so, Carrie, are you optimistic that things will get done in this area, given the time, the administration, and maybe some of these legislations that are being put on the table?
I'm optimistic in the sense that I see more conversations happening nationally on this issue, which I hope translates to more urgency on the part of the federal government, and that we do see bills like the Violence Against Women Act, you know, that it passed in the House in last month, so I'm hopeful about that. I hope that it passes in the Senate with these important tribal provisions. And then I'm also hopeful in the sense that I know that grassroots advocates will continue to work to hold the federal government accountable for its trust responsibility to tribal nations, including the new Missing and Murdered Unit.
And what about from the previous administration, Operation Lady Justice? Does any of that pour into what's going on now?
Well, I believe the Missing and Murdered Unit is supposed to build on Operation Lady Justice. I know that, you know, I'm hopeful that it will include more tribal consultation, input from tribal leaders and communities than Operation Lady Justice, but it does seem to build on the work that was started under that.
And so, Carrie, are there any key players to be watching as we think about using the government, using law as a way to protect our Native communities?
I think mainly just, looking to what Secretary Holland is doing. She has also recently announced that she has started to work on implementing the Not Invisible Act, which was one of her bills that passed in October. And so we're seeing some movement happen fairly quickly on her part.
And what about your organization? Are there any specific efforts you'd like to highlight?
Sure. Well, we just this week, we are leading on the National Week of Action in support of the May 5th Day of Awareness of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. So we have a lot of events this week, actually started on April 29th. We have briefings and webinars that can all be found on our website that talk about the different, the different approaches to this topic. So some talking about tribal resources and why Native-centered resources are important when addressing violence in Native communities, and then other webinars addressing, this issue specific to Native Hawaiian and Alaska Native communities. So there's a lot of events going on this week, and I think, there'll be a lot on social media as well.
And where do people find all this?
At niwrc.org.
Okay. All right. We'll continue the conversation if you'd like to join us too. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. And as we said at the top of the hour, that this whole week we're going to be focusing in on the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people. Today our focus is on legislation, what's being put in to the mix to try and help our communities, maybe even try and help advocates who are trying to bring more awareness to what is going on, why the numbers are so high, why the numbers are missing. If there's anything you'd like to share, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And what more needs to be done? We'll run through different things that are on the table now, on the books, but what more needs to be done? Does this even need to happen on a tribal level? Go ahead, share your thoughts. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Native women and girls are rightfully the focus of missing and murdered awareness efforts. But some advocates point out that men and gay and trans men and women are among the populations that also require awareness and action. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk about expanding the awareness focus. We hope you can join us.
Cache, is tonata she an awa na boosted healthcare coverage in it in a middle of elegant. As that I you and the canyon a yam ton aqua mos awa shop, let it on this healthcare.gov in awa, no let it on this 1-800-312-596 and pin an akin up to. Look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Don't know if I need to look in our Elahqua.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mesota Pueblo, and we are spending the week addressing the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, men, trans, and Two-Spirit people. Today, we're looking at ways governments are attempting to address the problem. And if you have a question or want to weigh in, give us a call. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. And here with us today, joining us out of Washington, D.C., is Carrie Colfer, and she is the Senior Native Affairs Advisor for the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center, and Carrie is Tlingit. And Carrie, thank you for being with us today. And so let's talk a little bit more about the Violence Against Women Act and its reauthorization, and just want to get more updates. Also, what kind of tribal provisions do you hope will change? And are you hearing from people in the Senate that they're open to those changes? Go ahead, share your thoughts, Carrie.
Sure. So the Violence Against Women Act, or VAWA, has been up for reauthorization since 2018. It was last reauthorized in 2013, which is when it gave implementing tribes restored jurisdiction over crimes involving domestic and dating violence. So this new bill, this new VAWA bill that just passed in the House last month, but has yet to be reintroduced in the Senate, has expanded provisions from 2013. So since the last VAWA reauthorization, we know that tribes who have been able to implement the jurisdictional provisions in the bill have seen increased safety and justice for victims in their communities. However, tribal leaders, judges, advocates, survivors, and families have also highlighted the need for additional resources and for tribes to be able to close certain jurisdictional gaps that were left out of the 2013 reauthorization. So some of these gaps include crimes involving child and elder abuse, stalking, sexual violence, sex trafficking, obstruction of justice, assault against tribal law enforcement. So this means that tribes currently do not have jurisdiction over non-Native perpetrators of these crimes. And we know that non-Natives actually make up a large percentage of the perpetrators of those crimes. So even though that VAWA 2013 was a success for tribes where dating violence and domestic violence are concerned, we know that there are many victims who are still not seeing justice. I think that there are many senators who understand why this is so important for tribes, because confusion over jurisdiction is one of the factors that prevents a quick and appropriate response to cases of missing Native people, which, you know, as we know, it can mean the difference between life or death, how quickly law enforcement are able to respond to go and find a missing person. So, we're looking to evolve a reauthorization to finally give tribes the authority to protect their citizens and communities.
And so just thinking about what it could hold if, you know, it is pushed to its fullest potential, do you really think that, when we think to legislation as a way and an answer, that it would change what we're seeing in our communities and more so just, you know, the impact that it is having on our communities when one person goes missing, when the story becomes that their life has been lost to something because of this, and that effect. And so, Carrie, I guess even more so, how does legislation reach the common person, reach the person who's sitting in their household right now? Connect those two spaces for us, Carrie.
Sure. So I think in terms of looking at the Violence Against Women Act, when tribes don't have jurisdiction over a lot of these crimes, that means that those cases get kicked either up to federal courts or state courts, and they're actually really, you know, most of the time, a lot of those cases are declined. So that means that those victims aren't seeing justice at all. And that just makes, you know, victims, their families, their communities feel hopeless when they know that someone can come onto tribal land, can, you know, commit crimes against tribes, against Native people, and potentially nothing will be done about it. That just leaves a sense of hopelessness. And I think that that's where this bill comes in, at least to know that victims will start seeing justice and that a lot, you know, that power will be restored to tribes who know their communities better, as opposed to, federal law enforcement, federal courts. But I do think, of course, that there, you know, that treats the justice side of things, but we do need resources for tribes in terms of mental health resources for families who are grieving, and we also need prevention. So it doesn't solve everything. There are still many other ways that we need to help communities.
And then we get back to law enforcement being able to follow through on a lot of this. And maybe we have people who are in our listening audience who are part of that. If there's anything you'd like to share, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Carrie, we'd also like you to tell us a little bit about Savannah's Act. It was passed recently. And your thoughts, a little bit of background and your thoughts on this legislation.
Yeah, so Savannah's Act was signed into law last October, and what it does is it directs the Department of Justice to develop law enforcement protocols for addressing cases of missing or murdered Native Americans and Alaska Natives, including recording tribal enrollment in federal databases, providing technical assistance and training to tribes and law enforcement on how to respond to such cases, and then to report statistics on those cases. And I think all of that is really important. I think a lack of data, a lack of statistics really lends to, you know, it leads to invisibility. Whereas the more data we have, the more reporting we have for these cases, it should theoretically lead to accountability. And so I do think bills like this are extremely important, though they work together with some of these, this other legislation and other efforts.
And Carrie, this is a big one, and we did a lot of coverage as it was making its way up to be something, you know, to help advocates, to help families, to help communities. And just knowing we're on this side of stuff, what are your thoughts, just knowing how much work went into getting this act passed?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it especially takes a lot of work on the part of survivors and their families and communities, tribal judges, tribal leaders, constantly talking about how important this is. And I think that's where, you know, tribal consultation and really speaking to tribes is important on the part of Congress and the federal government, because there are so many things like this that if you're not in Indian country and if you're not actually dealing with these cases and on the ground to understand them, you wouldn't think about necessarily how important data collection is. It may not seem like the biggest deal in the world that someone's tribal enrollment or their race is collected as part of a missing persons report, but it's actually extremely important, and it allows tribes to then, you know, get the funding that they need, get the resources that they need. So a lot of work went into passing Savannah's Act. So we were, you know, very excited.
And so there's another one that we should definitely put highlight on, the Not Invisible Act. What is it? Where does it stand? And what does it do?
So the Not Invisible Act also passed in October with Savannah's Act, kind of like a companion to the bill. It creates a joint commission between the Departments of Interior and Department of Justice on violence in tribal communities. And so that commission will then submit recommendations to the departments about how to combat this violence. And I do think the one important thing to note about the commission is that it will be made up of many different experts, and most importantly, ones from Indian country. So tribal judges, tribal leaders, victims, their families, health professionals with experience specifically in Indian country will all play a part on this commission and be able to make recommendations that are actually tailored to Indian country and the needs of tribal nations.
And so coming up, we are hoping to take a closer view into something that has gone on in a state. But Carrie, can you talk to us a little bit about why this also needs to be happening on the state level, legislation being passed? Any thoughts?
Well, so I know there have been state-level responses in cases like, you know, Montana, Washington, North Dakota, South Dakota, and I think that's really important because they lend some more, I guess, regional experience, you know, because not all tribes are the same, not all regions are the same throughout the country, and so I think it's really important that states are also responding to this in a way that's specific to the needs of their communities. So, you know, I know that a lot of states are starting to acknowledge that MMIW is an issue, and they are starting to seek solutions.
And there are a lot of Native people who are living outside of tribal communities, living in big urban centers. So how would legislation passed state level help or protect those people?
Well, yeah, I think it can help in the sense that it's not necessarily geared only towards, from a federal perspective, would be geared towards federally recognized tribes, but because not all Natives are living on tribal land, it's really important that states are able to kind of come in and acknowledge the Native people that are living in other communities or outside of their communities in urban areas, and then seek solutions from that perspective for the violence that those Native people are still disproportionately experiencing wherever they are in the country.
And so let's talk about how big of an issue this is in urban settings. What is known about urban populations and the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous persons?
Well, I think, again, data collection is an issue with this, but we do know that, you know, the likelihood of a Native woman being sex trafficked within the first 24 hours of arriving in an urban center is extremely high and a lot higher than the rest of the population. And so, yeah, we see, you know, we see this issue across the United States, whether it's on tribal land or in major cities. And so it's something, a huge part of the community, and it's something that really needs to be addressed.
And what are other issues that come along with all this, especially urban populations?
Well, I think it's especially just the issue of not being on federally recognized, you know, tribal land. It makes it difficult in terms of tracking, in terms of jurisdiction. All of that, you know, is an added layer of complication.
And why do you do this work, Carrie?
I do this work because I just, you know, I think that we all need to play our part in the ways that we can in addressing this violence in our communities. I mean, it's something that all 574 federally recognized tribes across the United States have in common, despite our geographical differences, cultural differences. And so that's not a coincidence. And so I think it's something that's really important to me because it just shouldn't be happening still. It's, you know, it's something that we all know about. It's not a new issue to Native people, and yet it's really not talked about enough. And so for me, it's important to have those conversations, you know, on a national level and on an international level, and make sure that the rest of the country knows that this is happening.
And speaking of international, later on in the week, we're going to talk about Canada and Mexico. What about on that international level, or maybe even a national inquiry into this issue? Any thoughts there? Go ahead, Carrie.
So, I mean, I think that a national inquiry like Canada's could be really helpful. I know, but like I said, you know, while Native people know that violence against Native women is a problem, and that it's existed since first contact. So I think a national inquiry would really help to take this conversation to a national level and examine the root causes of violence against Native women, but it can't be used to delay action. There have already been a lot of studies that have confirmed violence against Native women is a problem, that it's widespread in Native communities across the country. So we don't need a new study that's just going to confirm what we already know. You know, we need steps taken to address the violence and stop Native women from going missing and being murdered. So I think a national inquiry would be great, but it just can't be used to further delay justice, accountability, and action.
And what about working across borders or teaming up? Are there any efforts that you know of that are doing this kind of work, both on the northern and southern border?
While this isn't exactly my area of expertise, I do know that there are efforts, especially in conversations around trafficking. I know that a large percentage of trafficking victims from across the border are Indigenous peoples. There are relatives from, you know, from Mexico, from other countries south of the border. And I think that that's something that a lot of people are starting to coordinate on.
All right. Thank you for that. With us today is Carrie Colfer. She is the Senior Native Affairs Advisor for the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center, which does a lot of work to bring more awareness to the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people. And she's here with us. If you have any thoughts for her, maybe you are also working on this on a local level. You want to compare notes. You have some thoughts. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Carrie, just thinking about how all of this works together can get overwhelming. And I can only imagine the work that you're doing in your organization and thinking about it's like kind of being in the kitchen, lots of pots boiling, and you have to keep on top of all of these different things. And it seems that in order to do that, that also means coordination. cooperation between what is going on with your organization, as well as hearing directly from the federal government on what's going on. What has been something that has been really helpful to keep all of this information flowing, or just staying on top of everything? And I know there's people out there who are working on this who are thinking the same thing, or, you know, how do I keep in track of all of this and still make sure that, you know, this issue is at the forefront of important places and it's speaking, or, you know, coming off of important voices? Anything you want to share, Carrie?
So, yeah, for us at NIWRC, it's really important that we work in close collaboration with other Native partners, with other Native organizations, as well as with tribes and tribal leaders. And we also work closely with families who have experienced this kind of violence and survivors. So I think all of that, it is a lot, and it takes a lot of coordination, but it's really important because I think everyone has a unique perspective to add to this conversation. And so that's a big part of our work, is to constantly make sure that everyone is on board when we move forward with these issues and how we move forward with these issues.
Thank you for that. We got to pause here for a moment. But again, we are opening up the discussion. We're opening up our week, taking a look at this issue. And if there are other things that you would like to introduce into this conversation about things that need to be on the books to help protect our Native communities, to make sure that we don't have another stolen sister, brother. Any thoughts, go ahead and dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to hearing what you are doing in your community too. And if there are certain events that are going on to bring more awareness to this issue, you can always reach out to us on social media too. We're on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also find us too on Facebook. And, you know, as we take a different topic each day, looking at this and trying to understand more, trying to bring dialogue where it isn't happening. If there's something you want to add or jumpstart on a conversation this week, post it on Facebook. Hang tight. There's more ahead.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Thanks for starting off your week with us today here on Native America Calling. And it is our week-long look at the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Today we're talking about legislation. And if you've seen the government step in and help bring these numbers down, take a closer look into all of this, you can give us a ring. If you've seen the exact opposite, you have something to share, go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Carrie Colfer is with us. She is the Senior Native Affairs Advisor for the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Carrie is Tlingit. And Carrie, before we jump into more questions and thoughts, go ahead and give out your contact information again if people do want to follow up with NIWRC.
Sure. Our website is niwrc.org, and I can be reached at kcolfer@niwrc.org.
All right. Thank you for that. And let's see. Looks like we have another voice on the line with us today. Joining us out of Oklahoma City is Mickey Dollins, and he is a representative of District 93 in the Oklahoma House of Representatives. Our pleasure to have them here, Representative Dollins. Dollins, thank you for joining us. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
And Representative, tell us a little bit about the legislation you recently got passed.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Ida's Law is a bill that was brought to me by a constituent. Ida Beard is a member of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes, and her cousin, Lorinda, lives in South Oklahoma City, in which the district in which I represent is District 93. in Oklahoma, and she shared Ida's story with me, and I was shocked. I was not aware of this crisis before it was brought to my attention, but thankfully it was, and with the Lorinda's help, she introduced me to tribal leaders and tribal members across the state and advocates, and at the very beginning of the bill was kind of a listening tour, I guess for lack of better words, but we went around to different places and listened to advocates and family members and friends who had tribal members and friends who went missing, and the just complicated jurisdictional boundaries that exist between Indian country and state land. And we realized that the issue lied in the, I would say, the complicated jurisdictional boundaries and the different levels of law enforcement, from tribal police, local, county, state, and then, of course, the federal laws. And so together we created Ida's Law, which creates a position within OSBI that helps families navigate those jurisdictional boundaries and improve coordination amongst all levels of law enforcement.
And so in getting this through, did you receive any pushback?
Well, it's been a journey, and I've just played a small part in it. I'm the conduit for a lot of constituent-led legislation. And so when Lorinda brought this to my attention, I did what I was elected to do, and I drafted the bill. We had an interim study, which we brought a lot of people to the Capitol who have experienced this firsthand. And it's been the most impactful experience of my time in the legislature since I was elected in 2016. But through the process, the legislative process, we've learned a lot, and certainly I have too. We first ran the bill last year, and it made it through the House of Representatives, but this was right during when the pandemic hit, and the bill was laid over due to the pandemic, and then we reintroduced it this year, and give a big credit to my colleague, Representative Colin Waukee, who actually carried the bill in the House this year and got it through the finish line. And then, of course, our governor, Governor Stitt, signed it into law just earlier this month. So it's been a all-hands-on-deck effort, and it's really just been, led by Lorinda and a lot of Native Americans across the state who have had such a huge part in this, and obviously the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes, Governor Wassenaar, it's been a huge help. And through it all, just through determination and getting the word out through advocacy, it was able to get through. In the beginning, there were hurdles because it wasn't that well known of an issue amongst legislators at the Capitol. But thanks to a lot of activists, and particularly Ashley McCray, Lorinda Morgan, and the list goes on, they helped get they had the majority part in getting the bill over the finish line or getting it heard in the first place. So enough credit can't go go out to them. So it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for them.
Yep, there's a lot of people working hard on this. And Representative Dollins, how much did you know about the issue before working on this? And what's your knowledge now?
Well, before working on this, as I've said, I was unaware of the crisis that is happening in Indian country and beyond. And now, thanks to tribal members and advocates across the state, I feel like I've got a pretty in-depth knowledge on what this crisis is and ways in which we can continue to address it going forward. I'm really proud of what Lorinda and advocates have done with Ida's Law. It's already been passed in, I believe, South Dakota. And I see this as model legislation that different states across the country can use to address missing and murdered Indigenous people in their own states.
And so just to get a clearer view of how many potential nations are being helped, describe a little bit of your landscape of how many tribal nations are there in the state that could be accessing this legislation.
Yeah, there are 39 federally recognized tribes in Oklahoma, 38 or 39. And we had a lot of help from most of them who were very involved, the Cherokee Nation, Chickasaw Nation, Cheyenne Arapaho tribes, just to name three. There are many more. This has been a great deal, especially with the contentious nature of what's been happening between the governor of Oklahoma and tribal nations and their sovereignty, which has been not treated right, in my opinion. This has been one of those few bills that we've seen during the governor's tenure that has bridged this divisiveness and created a common ground for us to both get on board between the state and tribal nations to say this is something that we all agree that is an issue and that it's going to take all of us to work together to solve and address. And so I just hope that we can continue as a state to continue building off of this with tribal nations and reestablish that trust and also to continue to respect their sovereignty as tribal nations. That's the only way that they do so much to help the Oklahoma, and that has to be recognized and respected. And I see that Ida's Law is a good point going forward to continue to build on that and reestablishing the trust that has been lost over the past couple of years.
And Representative, we're always asking that question, what more can be done? Any thoughts about more that needs to be done to address the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous people?
I think that's a great question, and it has to be asked by all levels of government. Particularly, this bill is funded through federal grants, and that, you know, there have been administrations who have addressed this issue and have appropriated dollars. But it is, of course, the more funding that can go into it, the better. I think that with the bill that passed last year with NamUs, putting everyone into a DNA database, so if there's any evidence that is found, it can be cross-examined or cross-ran with different existing DNA database. It can help find those who have been missing for a long time. I think that just on all levels of government, there can be better coordination, and of course, more funding will improve that coordination when you have more people addressing the issue. This problem started centuries ago through colonization and through, you know, tribal members being treated disrespectfully, and now finally getting to the point to where legislators like me, who I'm not a tribal citizen, I represent a lot of tribal citizens in House District 93, but we're at a point now where it's becoming more at the forefront and that it's becoming talked about more. And I think that's so important that legislators have an awareness of that this is an issue, it's a crisis, and it must be addressed, and that the numbers in which Native Americans go missing is much higher than other other groups. So it's going forward. It's incredibly important that we continue to build off of this and continue to educate ourselves and listen to the people who this is affected and do everything we can to minimize this crisis going forward.
Thank you for that. Representative Dolan's here with us. And any thoughts on any of this? 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number to reach us. And Carrie, just hearing from the representative and seeing the work that's been done, what's your response?
I think it's great to hear that states are, you know, taking action on this issue, and we need to see more of it. And I think a lot of what the representative said about, you know, needing all levels of government to respond is really important, and it needs to be a multi-level response, and then it also needs to be, you know, there are so many layers of this problem, like, you know, issues with data, with law enforcement, with jurisdiction, that all need to be addressed in order to actually address, you know, the violence and the cause of the violence. So it's really, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
Thank you for that. And, you know, there is another one that I did want to bring highlight to, the Not Invisible Act. Again, what is it? Where does it stand? What does it do?
Yeah, so the Not Invisible Act was Representative Holland and Senator Cortez Masto's bill that creates a joint commission with the Departments of Interior and Department of Justice. And that commission will then make recommendations about, you know, combating violence against Native people. So it's important that that commission and those recommendations are made, you know, with tribal leaders and families and victims' input. And it looks like, based on the makeup of the commission, it looks like that is the case.
And so as we think about everything that we discussed today, also the information that Representative Dolan's brought forward, Carrie, what work also still needs to be done?
Well, I think, you know, a big part of this is making sure that tribes have restored jurisdiction over these other crimes through the Violence Against Women Act, but that we also have Native-centered resources available for victims and families and communities who are seeking to heal from these experiences with violence. I think, you know, in terms of how Native people have such a complex, have to deal with such a complex legal system, have so many barriers, you know, like jurisdiction that they have to overcome in order to seek justice. Native-centered resources are invaluable in helping people navigate that legal system, but also to heal in a way that centers Native culture, Native people, and Native values. So I think that that's a really important thing that we need. And then I think we also need to work on prevention. So we can't just be responding to cases of missing Native people, but we need to actually be preventing them from happening in the first place.
And what about support for families? What more work needs to be done?
Well, I think, you know, there's only about 58 shelters serving Indian country. There are very few Native-centered resources for families who are experiencing grief after the loss of a loved one or who are dealing with a missing loved one. And so I think we need funding. We need, you know, we need to be able to, for tribes and Native communities to be able to not only create Native-centered resources to support families, but also to sustain those resources.
And Representative Dolan's still here with us, Mickey Dolan's. Is there anything you would like to share? I know this is a lot of, you know, on the legislative side, but since we have you with us, is there any direct message you would like to send to your constituents about this issue or families who are grieving?
Well, I appreciate you asking me that. And since people are listening to this show from all over the country, I would recommend and hope that people who are, you know, want to make an impact on this continue to learn and even take this IDA's law as model legislation and contact your state representative, contact your state senator, and have the conversation and start that discussion, because it could be the same scenario in which my constituent reached out to me and helped educate me on this. So if you're interested in learning more about IDA's law, just simply Google IDA's law Oklahoma, and all the information you could want will come up on it. The actual bill's text will be there, and you can basically use that same legislation in your state to address this issue. And as it was said, this is just one piece of the puzzle. It's not an end-all, be-all, but it is a good start in the right direction.
Thank you for that. And Carrie, I turn that to you, too. Any words to families who are grieving, who understand this issue all too well?
Well, my heart goes out to families who are grieving, and I know that that's, you know, that's a large percentage of Indian country, and often families experience this kind of violence more than once, and just to know that we are all with you, and there are many people that are working to try to address this violence, and it's, you know, it's taken a lot of years, but we are starting to see people outside of Indian country finally acknowledging that this is a problem, and it can't bring back missing loved ones, but I hope that a lot of this work that everyone is doing will help to prevent more relatives from going missing or experiencing violence.
And Carrie, any thoughts to family members who are still hopeful, who have an individual loved one who is missing and are hopeful that maybe things will turn around and they'll come home or they'll be found?
Well, I do think that there's always hope, and I think that, you know, it's important not to give up hope on our loved ones and to know that there are, I think it's comforting to know that there are many other people who are out there who have experienced this, who both as a family member or as a victim, who are likely, you know, willing to help, you know, play a supportive role in that.
All right. Thank you for that. And we have opened the discussion, all of this. We will continue the entire week. And we know there are many different things to take to be put into the focus when it comes to understanding this issue, how much it has been impacting our communities and even our households. And we look forward to hearing your voice sometime this week. Your thoughts, the work that you are doing. Maybe you are also an advocate who is working hard on some of this. Again, if there are different events that are going on this week and you want to let people know about it, you can always post on our Facebook, and you can even send us a note on Twitter. We're at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Thank you to everybody that we heard from in the hour today. Thank you to our guests, Carrie Colfer, Representative Mickey Dollins. I'm Tara Gatewood, and tomorrow we're back with a look at how many missing and murdered Native men there are in the U.S. We hope you'll join us for that. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Support by the Sioux Trading Post, whose special selection of dried herbs are chosen for superior quality, and many sage, sweetgrass braids, and red willow bark and cedar are wild-crafted. All available at SiouxTrading.com. Wopila. Support by the Applied Indigenous Studies Department at Northern Arizona University, giving Native American students knowledge and tools to become change agents in their communities, where Indigenous knowledge is applied. NAU.edu/native.
Хака алхагулимлбут малхлукумут сутэнгэрлэгэг ахтагаагын алахтук канлхут гимузвихни чалилгаанааллнеритвсаари укуувэт парлуку healthcare.gov аллукаяагаарлуку 1-800-318-2596. Unakingunangkhtukhakan Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.